If you have a Bible this morning, I invite you to join me in Ruth chapter 2. I want to use the 20th verse as our starting point today, Ruth chapter 2, verse 20. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord," talking about Boaz, "who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." And Naomi said unto her, "The man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen." Last time when we looked at Ruth chapter 1, Naomi and her family had gone to Moab in a time of famine. You may remember that the husband Elimelech made the decision to move his family, and it was a very destructive and fatal decision. In the course of their 10-plus years of living in Moab, which was a heathen country, these Jewish people suffered great calamity. Elimelech, the head of the family, died, and the two sons died, leaving Naomi, Elimelech's wife, and her two daughters-in-law, foreign girls, Moabite damsels, Orpah and Ruth, to fend for themselves. Now, in that day, there was no social program for widows. Women were really destitute without a man to provide for them, to take care of them, to protect them. And so Naomi makes the decision to return to Judah, to Bethlehem. And as we come to the end of the chapter, we find that Naomi and Ruth have come back into the land of Bethlehem, Judah. And the women have asked, "Is this Naomi?" No doubt she's changed a little bit over the past decade. She's older, probably thinner. Naomi certainly has aged. And she has this foreign girl, this Moabite damsel named Ruth with her, who is her daughter-in-law. Now, it was unusual for the Jewish people to mix and mingle with foreigners, with strangers, people outside of the family of Abraham. So the fact that this foreigner, Ruth, is with her mother-in-law is a very awkward situation, if we could say it like that. She just doesn't belong. She's a different ethnicity. She's a different nationality. And as they come home, suddenly this girl is with her mother-in-law. I'm sure she feels very foreign to her environment. And as they come home, Naomi says, "Don't call me Naomi," in chapter 1, verse 20. "Call me Mara." And the word Mara means bitter. Naomi means pleasant, but she says, "Don't call me pleasant anymore. Call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. God's hand of judgment and chastisement has been against my family and I." She says, "I went out full, and the Lord brought me home again empty." And Ruth and Naomi then, as the chapter ends, it says, returned out of the country of Moab in verse 22, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. Now the second chapter begins by introducing us to a new character in the story. And Naomi had a kinsman. Now that word kinsman is going to be one of the key words in this book of Ruth, and it literally means redeemer. Naomi had a redeemer. And we'll talk about the significance of that, God willing, as we proceed. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, probably one of Elimelech, who's dead now, one of his first cousins. He had a relative, a mighty man of wealth. Here's a man who is a mighty man of wealth. We're introduced to this new character, and it says his name was Boaz. He was of the family of Elimelech. Now, Boaz, as we learned last week, was the son of Rahab the harlot. You can learn that in the first chapter of Matthew. In the genealogy of Jesus Christ, it says that Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab the harlot. You remember the story of Rahab in the book of Joshua? She was not an Israelite either, but God had brought her into the fold, and she had been converted. Boaz was Rahab the harlot's son. But it says in this verse that he was a mighty man of wealth. And it's interesting that though Elimelech had taken his family to Moab during the famine, and they had come home poor, they went out wealthy and full, they came home empty. She went out with a husband and two boys. She comes home bereft of her husband, bereaved of her two sons. She goes out with plenty of money in her pocket, but they come home, if you please, poverty-stricken. So she went out full, but the Lord has dealt bitterly with her, and she's been brought home again empty. Yet while they had gone to Moab in order to sustain life, Boaz had stayed at home in Bethlehem, Judah, and God had blessed him so that he is now a mighty man of wealth, we read. Sounds like Elimelech and his family probably should have stayed put and ridden out the storm as well, my friends. Now, this second chapter of Ruth is a chapter in which kindness is on vivid display. You saw it in our text. The Lord hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And it's against the dark background of the book of Judges where this story takes place, as we learned last week. The book of Judges is a story of violence and carnality and moral chaos. It's a story of a time in Israel's history, as the last verse of the book tells us, in which every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And against the dark background of the violence and the carnality and confusion of the book of Judges is the narrative of this single family and God's dealings with them in the book of Ruth. And this second chapter breathes a tenderness of tone and a gentleness of spirit that is a refreshing alternative to the book of Judges. It's a chapter in which the virtues of humility and respect for others and compassion and generosity and encouragement and gratitude and devotion and loyalty and, well, shall I say, chivalry, gentlemanly chivalry is on display. I wish I could read the whole chapter in your hearing. I thought about doing that, but it's a lengthy passage and would take us several moments. And in the interest of time, I will not, but I hope that you're familiar with it. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Now, it doesn't really tell us any more about Boaz here, but it introduces him. And it's as if the narrator or the writer of the story is signaling to us that this man is going to be the key figure in the story. It's important when we read our Bibles to look for Jesus in its pages. May I say that Boaz is going to be one of the most striking and lovely types or pictures of the Lord Jesus Christ in the Old Testament. We're going to see parallels between Boaz and Jesus. Our Boaz, our mighty man of heavenly wealth, the Lord Jesus Christ, dear friends, is also our kinsman, our redeemer. And he is going to take care of the poor strangers. We're going to see that Boaz is the friend of Ruth, the poor sinner. In fact, she thought of herself as a sinner, as somebody who was unworthy. She says over and again in this narrative of the book of Ruth that I am not worthy. I'm a stranger. I'm a foreigner. I'm a heathen. I'm not one of the sons or daughters of Abraham. And she is impressed with a very humble attitude as she thinks about how unworthy she is that anybody would be kind to her. But yet Boaz, this great superior businessman in Bethlehem, Judah, is going to stoop to bless her and to take care of her and to provide for her, just like our Boaz, in his great wealth, my beloved, has stooped and condescended to bless and to take care of poor sinners, unworthy strangers like you and me. So there's grace here. In fact, this word kindness, I said that this is a chapter in which the word kindness is on display. We saw it in our text. God has not left off his kindness. You saw the same word back in chapter 1. This is one of the key words of Ruth. Chapter 1, verse 8. Listen to Naomi's prayer. Remember, as the boys have died, her husband has died, Naomi says to her daughters-in-law in Ruth chapter 1, verse 8, go return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly. There's the word. The same word, precisely. May God deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Now, their husbands are dead, but what she's saying is, may God bless you to remarry. May God give you another husband. So go home and may God show his kindness to you. And you'll see this word not only in chapter 1, verse 8, in our text in chapter 2, verse 20, but you'll see it again in chapter 3 of Ruth, verse number 10, where Boaz says to Ruth, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, insomuch that thou followest not young men, whether rich or poor." Now remember, Boaz is a whole generation older than Ruth. He's one of Elimelech's cousins, Ruth's father-in-law. And so he's Naomi's peer. So he's probably at least in his mid-50s, maybe early 60s. Ruth is probably in her mid-20s. He's significantly older than her. But he says that you've showed kindness to me. It's the same word. Now, I want to tell you that this word kindness is not only a key word in the book of Ruth, but it's one of the most important terms in the Old Testament. It's a very ordinary word, isn't it? And we say, be kind. Or if we talk about so-and-so has the milk of human kindness in his heart or in her heart. When we use that word, it's a common term to us, and it's an ordinary term. But I suggest for your consideration that this Bible word, kindness, though it's a very ordinary word, it actually conveys a very extraordinary thought. For it's the Hebrew word hesed, spelled H-E-S-E-D. It's translated into the English by the word kindness, loving kindness, faithfulness, mercy, merciful kindness. All of these terms are Old Testament terms. The word loving kindness, for instance, Jeremiah 31:3 is a verse that most Old Baptists have heard that says, "I have loved thee with an everlasting love, therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee." Loving kindness, what does that mean? It's this Hebrew word chesed, and it literally means covenant loyalty. That is, there's a relationship, a covenant, and because we're bound together in covenant, we are loyal to each other. The word kindness in your Old Testament, and particularly in this book of Ruth, speaks of God's covenant love, his covenant loyalty. It speaks, if you please, of faithful love regardless of merit, even if another person is unfaithful. For instance, let me give you just a couple of passages. Hosea 2:19, God says to Israel, "I will betroth thee unto me forever." Now here's a husband that is about to marry a bride. God is the husband. Jehovah is the husband. Judah is his bride. And he says, "I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee." I'm going to enter into a covenant of marriage with you. "I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness and in judgment and in loving kindness and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness." Here you have the three terms, loving kindness, mercies, faithfulness, that all derive from that same Hebrew word, hesed, which speaks of God's covenant love or his faithful love even to an unfaithful people. For an illustration of that, look at the 89th Psalm and listen, if you would, to the 33rd verse. Here is the Davidic covenant in which God says, "If David's children forsake my law and walk not in my judgments." Now, by the way, this is really applicable to more than just David. It speaks of the super David or Jesus Christ and his children, his family. And by the way, it's talking about you and me. If God's children forsake his law and break his commandments. Now, I want to ask you, does that ever happen? Have any of you ever forsaken God's law and broken his commandments? Have you ever sinned, in other words? What happens if we sin, does that disinherit us from God's covenant? Does it blot us out of his family? Does it make null and void God's promise to us? No, he says, if his children forsake my law and break my commandments, then, I love that he doesn't say, then I will cut them out of the family. He says, then I will visit their transgressions with the rod and their iniquity. I'll chasten them. Like a father chastens his son, but a father doesn't disown the son. If the son has done wrong, he simply disciplines and chastises the son. He says, "Nevertheless, my loving kindness You see, God is still going to be faithful to us even though we've been unfaithful to Him. That's what grace is all about, my beloved. God is faithful to you even though you have been unfaithful to Him. He's faithful to me in spite of my poor track record, in spite of my inconsistency. God has been true and loyal and devoted in His love and covenant commitment to me, even in spite of my sins. He says, "Nevertheless, my loving kindness I will not utterly take from Him, nor suffer my faithfulness to fail. My covenant will I not break, nor alter the thing that has gone out of my lip." What I'm saying is God's treatment and dealings with you and me does not depend on whether we earn it and are worthy of it, but He is good to us in spite of our sins. And that's really the heart and soul of the good news that we call the gospel. The gospel is a message that God blesses the unworthy, that God is kind to the unthankful, that God is gracious to sinners. So Ruth chapter 2 is the story of kindness. Ruth chapter 1 is Naomi's prayer, "May the Lord deal with you in kindness." That is, may He bless you even though you don't deserve it. That's her prayer. And the events in Ruth chapter 2, I dare say, are the answer to Naomi's prayer in chapter 1, verse 8, "May the Lord deal kindly with you." Now, this is not just a form of words. We read passages like this and we say, oh yeah, that's what people say, "May God bless you." You know, that's what we say to each other. And by the way, we can sometimes say things like that and not really mean them. When Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, "Please go home and may Jehovah deal with you in kindness, and may He give you rest in the house of your husbands." These two girls didn't have any husbands, but she's saying, may God bless you so that He will give you a new husband. And chapter 2 begins by introducing us to Boaz, who is going to redeem Ruth from her misery. He's going to be the answer to Naomi's prayer. And this, dear friends, is a very tender chapter. Now, I don't know about you, but I love mild and tender scenes because we're living in a world of anger and viciousness and violence. We're living in the book of Judges. We're living in an environment in which there is moral chaos and in which there is anarchy in many respects. Every man does that which is right in his own eyes, and people are ready to come to blows. I was watching the Republican debate last night, and I was really impressed that as intense as the exchanges became between some of the candidates, that they didn't actually roll up their sleeves and come to blows. I thought at one or two points that they could actually come to blows. We're living in a world where there is more and more of this aggression and anger that is exhibited in society. But Ruth chapter 2, my beloved, is a refreshing alternative to that. It's a chapter of a tender tone. It's a chapter of kindness, if you please. Now, what is the scene in this chapter? The scene here is Ruth goes out to glean in the fields of Boaz. Listen to chapter 2, verse 2. "And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi," now notice it says she's a Moabite. As we learned last time, she was converted to the Jewish religion. She was a Jewish convert. She says, "Thy God shall be my God." So she renounces her idols and she says, "Thy people shall be my people." She joins herself to the people of Israel by conversion, and that was permissible. That God brought strangers to dwell within the camp of Israel, and He promised them that He would protect them. And Ruth was one of those, just as Rahab before her had been a convert to the God of the Jews, to Jehovah. And it says, Ruth says to Naomi, now here's this younger daughter-in-law who has committed herself to being loyal to her mother-in-law, and she says to Naomi, "Let me go out to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace." And she said unto her, "Go, my daughters." And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Now, what is happening here is a harvest, a barley harvest. As the end of chapter 1 told us, they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. How times have changed from 10 plus years ago when Naomi left and it was a famine. Now they're actually reaping a harvest. And in the time of harvest, what would happen is the men, the harvesters, the reapers, would go and gather the crop. They would cut the grain, the barley or the wheat, or pluck the ears of corn. They would gather the grain. And then whatever fell on the ground after they gathered it was to be gleaned. That is, women would come after them and pick up the gleanings. And this was a provision that God had made in his kindness, if I can say it like that, under the Mosaic Law. Let's look at the background of this practice. In the Mosaic Law, God made provision for the poor and the needy in the land. Look at Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. For the first passage that we will go to, just to get the historical background of this, it says, "And when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field." So here's a farmer who has a field. He says, don't reap the corners. You plow in a circle. You reap, if you please, in a circle. Leave the corners. "Neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of the harvest." That is, you're not to go back and pick up every grape or every grain of barley or wheat. And he says, "And thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and the stranger. For I am the Lord your God." Do you see kindness here in the law of God? God is concerned about the poor, about the widow, about the orphan. God is concerned for the foreigner, for the stranger in the land. By the way, this is an expression of God's love and his kindness, his concern for the poor, and it's an emphasis in both testaments of the Bible. Psalm 41, verse 1, for instance, says this, "Blessed is he that considereth the poor. The Lord will deliver him in time of trouble." Here's a message for you and me, dear friends. Now you say, well, I've seen people with these signs that say, you know, can you help? And there are a number of people who are dishonest, you say, and who are using those funds for dishonest means, and that's true. And we need to exercise wisdom and discernment and good judgment, of course. But in the final analysis, dear friends, don't let the fact that there are shysters and there are con artists harden your hearts so that you're no longer kind to people who are in need. For he says, "Blessed is he who considers the poor. The Lord will bless him in a time of trouble. The Lord will preserve him, the man who considers the poor, and will keep him alive. And he shall be blessed upon the earth, and thou wilt not deliver him under the will of his enemies. In fact, the Lord will strengthen him upon the bed of his languishing." What tremendous promises to this injunction to be concerned for the poor. In the 31st chapter of Proverbs, King Lemuel's mother, before she talks about the criteria for a virtuous woman, advises her young son, "Open thy mouth for the dumb." Now she says, speak for people who can't speak for themselves. And by the way, this is the verse that gives us incentive to speak out for the unborn baby in its mother's womb in this day in which abortion is such a plague in our country. He says, "Open your mouth for the dumb. You speak for the speechless. Stand up for the less fortunate. In the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction," listen to this, "open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and the needy." That's King Lemuel's mother's counsel to him. She says, "Son, don't forget, though you may become a mighty man of valor and of wealth, and you may be a great man, don't forget to look out for the less fortunate, for the poor, the needy, and the strangers." And then if you turn to the New Testament, you say, well, Brother Mike, that's an Old Testament ethic. It's also true in the New Testament, as James chapter 1, verse 27 reminds us when he says, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to understand the finer nuances of the doctrine of supra or infralapsarianism. Is that what it says? No, my friends. True religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless. That's the little orphan. And the widows in their affliction, and to keep yourself unspotted from the world. That's true religion. That's pure religion, dear friends, is to not only believe certain things, but to put your faith into practice by your works and to minister to those who are less fortunate, who are in need. To be kind. You say, well, they don't deserve it. But you see, this is the way God has dealt with us. And what we have in this second chapter of Ruth, dear friends, is an expression of this principle from the Mosaic Law. Look at another passage, Leviticus 23, verse 22. God says, and when you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field when thou reapest. Now, this was a provision in the law. God says, don't harvest everything. Don't be covetous. Don't say it's all for me. He says, neither shalt thou gather any gleaning of the harvest. That is, that which is left over. But thou shalt leave the gleanings for the poor and the stranger, for I am the Lord your God. And one more passage, if you would, in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 24, verse number 19, where the Lord in his law says to Moses and the children of Israel, when thou cuttest down thine harvest in thy field and hast forgot a sheaf in the field. You say, oops, I forgot that bundle that was wrapped up with a piece of twine. I forgot that last one. God says, thou shalt not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hands. God is concerned to take care of those who can't take care of themselves. He says, when thou beatest thine olive tree, thou shalt not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. When you gather the grapes of thy vineyard, thou shalt not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, for this reason, that thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman. You were once a stranger. You were once poor. You see, that's such a good attitude for us, right? There's a verse in the New Testament that says that a preacher, in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 2, that a preacher is to be somebody who can have compassion on the poor and on them that are out of the way, because he knows that he himself also is encompassed with infirmities. If we can just remember the hole of the pit from which we were digged, if we can remember our feeble and insignificant beginnings, if we can just remember how God has blessed us in spite of ourselves, it will help us, as incentive goes, to extend the same grace to others that God has extended to us. Isn't that important, my beloved? Be kind one to another, says Ephesians 4:32. Here's a verse that I could write on my mirror and read every morning that I need to remember. Be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. If I can remember how much God has forgiven a sinner like me, it will help me to extend that same grace and kindness to others. That's what we see in this second chapter of Ruth. We see God in kindness, providing for the poor and the stranger. Now we see an example of how that is about to be lived out, as Ruth is a stranger, but she goes to glean after the reapers in the fields of Boaz. I want you to notice now, after this lengthy introduction, Ruth's kindness. Then we're going to talk about Boaz's kindness, then Jehovah's kindness. Look at the kindness of Ruth. On display first in this second chapter of Ruth, my beloved, is the kindness or the character of this Moabite damsel. And I think she's an impressive young lady. The first thing I notice about her is that she's responsible and industrious. Do you see that in verse 2 when she says to her mother-in-law, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. By the way, that word grace is a synonym. It's a similar term to this word hesed, which means covenant love, blessing to the unworthy. She says, somebody perhaps will be merciful to me. Somebody perhaps will show me kindness. And she says, I'm willing to try it. Now remember, she's in a foreign country. She doesn't belong. She looks differently than everybody else. But yet she's courageous. And she's willing to go out and try it. That somebody perhaps will let me glean. Maybe I'll just pick up a handful of grain that we could use to make a single pancake, you know, but we're hungry, we're poor. Here's her mother-in-law, she's older, she's more feeble, but Ruth is a young lady full of energy and health, but she's a foreign girl in a foreign country, but she says to her mother-in-law, let me go glean. And I want to say this speaks of her character, that she didn't simply sit at home praying for food, but she goes out to do what she can to meet their need for food. You know, that's a very important and honorable virtue and quality in a person's character, to be industrious, to be responsible. The Bible upholds a high work ethic. Do you know the Bible reserves some of its stiffest language for lazy people, for the slothful, for the sluggard? And the individual who works hard, the Bible tells us that to all labor there is profit. And you know, our country today, and I know that I've lived here long enough to notice that this congregation is full of a bunch of hardworking people, that slothfulness is not a problem that really plagues our congregation as a whole, but each one of us has our own tendencies toward it, don't we? But Ruth is a picture of industry, how that she's willing to go out and to work hard. In fact, gleaning was not easy work. It meant that you had to bend over and that you had to stand up and bend over again and then stand up. And gleaning meant that you were out under the sun and it was sweaty and it was hot and it was long. And it meant that you had to look real closely to find the leftovers that the harvesters had left. And it was a hard job, but yet she's willing to do it out of her love for her mother-in-law, Naomi, isn't she? That's a great quality, my beloved. Ruth's industry and responsibility. And then I want you to notice verse 7, where it says that she said, when she came to the field of Boaz, and the superintendent or the supervisor met her and said, what are you doing? She asked, as he reports now in verse 7, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came, watch this, and the report is she hath continued even from the morning until now, except that she tarried a little in the house. She took a 15-minute break when the others took their break, and she got a drink of water. But besides that, she hasn't stopped working. That's his report. And by the way, people are watching us, whether we know it, dear friends. Other eyes are inspecting the kind of lives that we're living out here, just like this supervisor was inspecting Ruth. She had asked kindly and respectfully to glean, and he had given her that privilege. And I want you to notice that not only is she responsible and industrious in her attitude, verse 11 says it like this, Boaz says that you've been responsible and you've worked hard and been loyal to your mother-in-law. Listen to this. Verse 11, Boaz said unto Ruth, it hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband. Now, Ruth didn't owe Naomi this, but out of love for her, she was kind. She stayed to minister. She stayed to be her nurse. And how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. So Ruth is impressive for her industry, her kindness in getting busy and caring about taking care of their need for food. And notice another virtue of Ruth. She's very humble. I love verse number 10, where Ruth says, after Boaz has encouraged her, she fell on her face, it says, and bowed herself to the ground. And she said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing that I'm a stranger? I think it's interesting that Ruth never asks the question in all of these pages why the hard things had touched her life. Not once does she complain and say, why me, Lord? Instead, she says, why have people been so kind to me? And by the way, that's the right attitude for you and me. How humble is this young lady? She recognizes she doesn't deserve Boaz's favor. She recognizes that she is a foreign girl, that she's a stranger. But notice her humility, dear friends. Look at verse 11. And Boaz answered her and said that it has been shown me how kind you've been to your mother, how you've left all. You've been humble. You've been devoted. And notice she was also grateful. Verse number 13. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord. And that's simply her way of saying thank you to Boaz. For that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thy handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thy handmaidens. I hear humility, I hear gratitude in these words. And I want you to notice one other thing about her, that she's very obedient. Verse 22, at the end of this chapter, when Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou go out with Boaz's maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. It says, so she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz. She does what her mother-in-law says. She's not rebellious, recalcitrant, headstrong, saying, no, I know what I'm going to do. She is obedient. She's respectful. She's humble. And she follows the counsel of her mother-in-law. The kindness of Ruth is on display here. Isn't that a lovely scene? And then look at the kindness of Boaz. Verse 1 says he was a great man, a mighty man of wealth, a great man. I suggest for consideration, though, that his greatness is not defined primarily by his wealth, but by his godliness. Godliness is likeness to God. That's a good definition. To say somebody is godly means that they're like God. And Boaz is great, not only for his wealth and his position in society, but primarily for his heart. And that's what will make any one of us and every one of us great, dear friends. Is not our social status, but the kindness in our hearts. For look at how Boaz, who is the businessman who owns the field, and he has all of these harvesters working for him, and he has this superintendent looking over the harvesters, keeping them in line and making sure that they work hard and making sure that each one is paid. Boaz, it says, comes to visit them in verse 4. Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said unto the reapers, and I want you to notice how he greets them. You boys get to work out there. Is that what he says? No, he says, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. Now, I dare say that this is a very unusual kind of greeting, especially in the modern business world. How many employers would tell their employees when they greet them, may Jehovah bless you? And would they respond and say, and may he return the blessing on you as well, dear sir? That demonstrates to us, dear friends, the reputation that this man had with his workers, because he shows them a godly respect, because his heart, if you please, is full of the love of God. He's so sensible and aware of how kind God has been to him that it overflows in his dealings with others. And he pronounces this benediction upon them, may the Lord be with you. And they answered him, may the Lord bless thee. You say, well, that's just a formality. I suspect that Boaz is a man of integrity and that nothing here is just here to fill up space. This is not just a formality. It's a very sincere expression of his concern for their, not only their physical well-being, but their spiritual well-being as well. And then notice his warm and tender encouragement to this poor stranger in verses 8 and 9. Then Boaz said to Ruth. Now Boaz says to his supervisor in verse 5, whose damsel is this? As soon as he comes to greet them, he notices somebody that he hasn't ever seen before out there gleaning with the ladies. And he asks the supervisor, who is this? And the supervisor gives him that answer. It is the Moabitess damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she has worked hard all day, except that she took just a little break. She tarried a little in the house. But she has worked from the very morning until now, nonstop. And notice how Boaz then speaks to Ruth. He goes to her in verse 8 and says, hearest thou not, my daughter? Now, that simply means, listen to me. Go not to glean in any other field. Neither go from hence. Now, remember, he's probably in his mid-50s, early 60s. She's in her 20s. She's a foreign girl. He didn't have to let her glean there. I know God in his law had provided that they do that, but he already had a bunch of gleaners. Perhaps he could have said that there are already enough ladies here picking up after the harvesters. after the reapers, and why don't you go find someplace else? He might have told her that, but he tells her, I don't want you to ever leave here and go to work in another field. He says, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Watch this. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have not I charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? Now, he had already called the workers together and said, I want to tell you something. You see this new girl here? Keep your hands off. You treat her with respect. Now, that's real leadership, my beloved. For he knows that she's beautiful, that she's lovely, that she's a foreigner. And he knows that these young men are young men. And he knows what they're like. And he knows that they're eyeing her. And he says, that's not because of his own interest in her. He's doing this because he's a man of integrity. Because the kindness of God is in his heart. You see? And Boaz says, I've commanded the young men not to touch thee. And when you're thirsty, when thou art athirst, go to the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. So don't hesitate to get a refreshing drink. And then she fell on her face and she says, why have you been so kind to me? She feels unworthy of it. I'll tell you, God's kindness is in her heart and God's kindness is in his heart. Boaz is an impressive man. He's a mighty man, a great man, not because he's wealthy, but because he has the love of God in his heart. That's why he's great. And notice how he encourages her. And then notice his genuine faith and confidence in Jehovah in verse 11. And Boaz answered Ruth and said, it hath been fully showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother, and art come to a people which thou knowest not heretofore. That is, I know that this took great courage on your part, and it shows what kind of person you are, Ruth. And here, watch his prayer. May the Lord recompense thy work. May God repay you. That's the best way you can tell somebody thank you. Say, I don't know how to thank you for all you've done for me. Just say, may God repay you. And then you pray to God and say, Lord, bless this person in a manifold way. May the Lord recompense. I'll tell you, when God repays you, dear friends, you've been reimbursed in a way that you couldn't even begin to imagine. Did you know God has dealt bountifully with me? Has he dealt bountifully with you? I love that verse in Psalm 119. The Lord hath dealt bountifully. That means he's gone above and beyond the call of duty. God has just overflowed in his goodness to us, like Joseph's wagons. You remember when he sent to pick up his father Jacob from the land and to bring the whole family to Egypt. Jacob didn't believe that Joseph was dead, so Joseph took a bunch of wagons and loaded them down with all sorts of provisions and wealth and riches. And when Jacob saw the wagons, the overflowing benevolence and goodness of Joseph, when Jacob saw the wagons, he said, Joseph's alive. I want to ask you, dear friends, have you ever seen the wagons? Has God daily loaded you with benefits? Has the Lord overflowed in his goodness in your life? And are you humbled by that? Are you amazed by it? You know, we sing Amazing Grace, and we've sung it so much, perhaps we've forgotten how truly amazing it is. The best way to live life, my friend, is to live it surprised. To never cease to be surprised that God would be kind to the likes of you and me. That God would bless me so amply and abundantly. It is truly an amazing thing that he, the God of the universe, would favor the likes of me. Our Boaz. And Ruth is humbled by his kindness. Boaz is so generous. In fact, look at what he does in verse number 15, he commanded the young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. As she's gleaning, as she's picking up a grain here and a grain there, let her glean among the sheaves, not just in the field, but where the bundle has been tied together in its vicinity. And he says this, and reproach her not. This man is, his heart is generous. And he says, and let fall also some handfuls of purpose. Now, my beloved, I want to tell you that phrase is very significant. Let fall also some handfuls of purpose for her. What this means simply, my beloved, is that Boaz does not want to humiliate her by treating her like a charity case. So he asks his reapers to let some grain fall, supposedly by accident, so that she could pick it up. She could work for it, but it looked like it was accidental. Boaz has intended for it to happen purposefully to provide for her. That's what your Lord does for you. Did you know that? Handfuls of purpose. Not just a little smattering here and a sparse collection over here, but God says handfuls of purpose. Here's a whole bunch. You know, I've spread fertilizer before in my garden area, and I'll never forget that I bought one of those fertilizers from the hardware store, you know, that you push and you know, you open it just a little bit and it spins and it sprays it, and it's supposed to spread it evenly. But the first time I ever did it, I opened it too wide and it dropped a big bunch of the fertilizer in one place. Has that ever happened to you? And then I tried to shut it real quickly and finally got it adjusted properly, but there was a whole bunch of fertilizer right there. That's what a handful of purpose is. As she's gleaning along, make sure that you've dropped some. And by the way, it was deliberate on Boaz's part, and it's deliberate on the Lord's part to drop blessings for you and me, sometimes in abundance that we couldn't have even imagined. But what I'm saying this morning is Boaz is a gentleman. He's protecting her. And really, in this kind of friendship, as he's providing for her needs, there's an old saying, you know, a friend in need is a friend indeed. And Boaz is a friend in Ruth's need. He's providing for her. He's protecting her. I love what Matthew Henry says about it. In the kindness of Boaz to Ruth, let us note the kindness of our Lord Jesus Christ to poor sinners like us. What we see here is the kindness, not only of Ruth, toward Naomi, and her respect and her humility, and the kindness of Boaz to take care of Ruth, but we see the kindness of God. This chapter is really about God's kindness, Jehovah's loving kindness. Dear friends, there are several hints of the providential care and guidance of God in this chapter. For instance, look at verse 3, where it says that she came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap, H-A-P, strange word, her hap, was to light on a part of the field belonging to Boaz. Do you see that in your King James Bible, her hap? That means simply that it just so happened when Ruth went out to glean, it just so happened that she settled unwittingly on a field that belonged to one of her own relatives. Who could have arranged it like that? You say, Brother Mike, everything that happens isn't arranged by God. You're right. We are not absoluters, but I do believe in the providence of God. And I believe that in answer to prayer, God leads his dear children along. He guides them. He answers prayer. He takes care of them. He provides for them. And sometimes what appears to be coincidence to us is really by the Lord's orchestration. Sometimes the Lord answers our prayers. And it may appear that you've just happened on a place, but God is providing. This is an evidence of his guidance and his providential care. In answer to Naomi's prayer in chapter 1, may the Lord deal kindly with you. He's doing it now. And then look at verses 5 and 6. When she asks the supervisor, may I reap here? Instead of saying, no, I'm sorry, we're full. We don't have room for any more. He allows her that privilege. And then Boaz just happens to pay a visit. And behold, says verse 4. That word behold is intended to suggest to us that he didn't always show up on the scene to check on the workers, but on this particular day he did, because God is answering prayer and God is showing kindness to his people. And then Boaz has this heart that is so deeply touched to help Ruth and Naomi that he says, leave some handfuls of purpose. And notice in verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until the evening and beat out that which she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. Now, who knows what an ephah is here? I wondered one time, and then I found another verse that says an ephah is about one-tenth of a homer. I thought, that doesn't clear anything up. It just makes it, you know, when you step into the Bible world, you're stepping into a world that's not really familiar, right? We measure things in bushels and pecks and gallons and pints and quarts and so forth. Here's the equivalent. an ephah was equivalent to about one bushel, or about 6 to 8 gallons, or about 30 pounds of grain. Now, usually if a gleaner was to work in the field, she might come home with an apron full of grain, an apron full. But this girl has a bushel basket. She has about 30 pounds of grain. She has a wheelbarrow full of grain. So that when she gets home, Naomi is surprised and she says, "Where hast thou gleaned today?" She says, "My, my, you've collected enough for months. I sent you out to collect enough so that we could eat tomorrow. But you've gotten enough to last us for a whole month because of Boaz's kindness." Because who put that in Boaz's heart to be so kind? God did. And aren't you glad you trust a God who can put it in people's hearts? Because his power is greater than our old nature. God can put that love and kindness in people's hearts to do for you what you had never. And by the way, my life is a testimony to the fact that God has been gracious to me in an abundant way, even beyond what I could ask or think. He's done exceeding abundantly above. Isn't that your story? Now, I want you to notice Naomi and Ruth left full, but they came home empty. But they came home empty so that they could be filled with all the fullness of God's gracious provision. Now they have this ephah of barley grain. Oh, God has answered prayer in a mighty way, dear friends. And Naomi gives all the glory to God in verse 20. "Blessed be Boaz of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness." Now, this is a chapter about Ruth's kindness. It's a chapter about Boaz's kindness. But it's a chapter primarily about the kindness, the loving kindness of Jehovah to his people. And Naomi says to Ruth, "It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field." Boaz had told her, "Don't go anywhere else. You stay here. Fast by my maidens." And Naomi says, "Why don't you do what he said?" She counsels her to not go into any field. Let me make application of my message to this morning. One of the lessons I think we could glean from this story is that God guides his little children in this world. He guides us in answer to prayer. Never forget it. Keep praying, because God will do exceeding abundantly above all that you could ask or think. So ask and it shall be given. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened. The fact is, dear friends, that many of the things that we think just fell into place coincidentally in our lives are probably due to the fact that God, in his covenant loyalty to us, is answering prayer and blessing us, even though we don't deserve the blessing. The second thing I think we can learn from this is that God guides his little children as they are found in the path of obedience. Ruth did what she knew to do. She didn't sit at home with her arms folded and say, "Lord, please give me bread." But she went out to work for it. She did what she could do. And it's while she was in the path of ordinary obedience to God that God extraordinarily began to put the pieces of the puzzle together so that she meets her next husband, as we will learn in the next chapter, who is going to redeem Ruth and redeem the family of Naomi in a marvelous way. I want to say this by way of application this morning. What a privilege it is to glean in the fields of our Boaz, of our Lord Jesus Christ. Oh, my friends, it's not a burden. You say, what hard work it is. It's hard work. It's hard to overcome the flesh and to deal with difficult people. My beloved, it's a privilege to glean. And since he's dealt so bountifully with you and me, since God has been so kind to poor sinners like us, let us never be found gleaning in another field. Naomi's question to Ruth in verse 19, "Where hast thou gleaned today?" is a good question for you and I to regularly ask ourselves at the end of each day as we examine ourselves. Where have I gleaned today, you might ask yourself? Have I been laboring in the field of the world, or have I been laboring in the vineyard of my Lord? Let us labor, not for the meat that perisheth, but for that which endureth to life everlasting. Let you and me commit ourselves this morning, my friends, to being faithful to the covenant, to being loyal to him, to kindness, and to his people, laboring with tender and kind hearts in the vineyard of our blessed Lord, for he has been so kind, he has not left off his kindness to you and me.